What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Untapped North. As some of you know, my name is Andrew Stewart, and I am your host. I am very excited to bring you today's episode, as at the end of this past week, I had the opportunity to interview Jamie Campbell from Sportsnet. And, of course, we chatted about baseball, from the ongoing lockout situation to the Blue Jays. This 25-minute Q&A was a fantastic experience and opportunity, and I want to take this time to thank Jamie for his time this past week. So without further ado, here is my Q&A with Jamie Campbell.
Nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I guess, you know, right off the hop, we're either close or we're not close, or, you know, we're only hearing certain bits and pieces. But what can you tell me right now, I guess, about where we're at with the MLB lockout?
What a mess. I think there's no need for me to go over the particulars as to where the owners stand and where the players stand. I think the gap is sizable and most of the issues are now public and for the most part understood. You know, ultimately what the owners are trying to do is suppress salaries by suppressing the CBT, which is the competitive balance tax, as much as they possibly can. While at the same time, the players are trying to push the levels on that with an eye on also compensating good young players earlier in their careers as opposed to later through arbitration and free agency. So the gap seems so wide right now. What annoys me is how ignorant they seem to be, and I'm talking about both parties here, to the state of the world. And I know there are a lot of people that would not consider any of those factors because a labor negotiation can take place at any time in history. But the truth is, we had a 60-game season 2 years ago with expanded playoffs. We had a full season a year ago, though the team that this country seems to focus on played, you know, only about a third of their games in their home stadium due to pandemic restrictions. And now on the cusp of negotiations, there's an invasion of Ukraine. And it's not that, you know, let's get an agreement together, people, because, you know, the rest of the world is a mess. It's that it just seems to the average person, the baseball fan, that the things they're bickering about our luxuries. It feels that way. I think that's inescapable. I tend to side with the players because I agree that they deserve a little bit more based on the revenues that we continue to hear baseball draws. The players, in my opinion, deserve a more equitable share of those revenues, especially young players who are putting up incredible numbers, whether it's, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or any of these really solid young players that are emerging on the scene. But that doesn't mean that, you know, that they don't have things, have a pretty good scenario as it stands right now. I'm as frustrated as anybody else, to be perfectly honest. And I just wish they would get back into a room and heck, do shift work if they have to, but figure this out. It just feels, based on what the commissioner said the other day, it almost feels as if there is no desire on ownership's part to come to some kind of an agreement. It's as if they would prefer the season be delayed, and that baseball not actually be played. That's the feeling, it seems, that I think a lot of people are getting, myself included.
I side on that as well. I'm on that side as well, considering, you know, I felt like, what were we doing all of this time waiting around? We finally have talks X number of weeks before we're supposed to start, you know, players are supposed to start their spring training. It was inevitable. It was almost like they knew this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating. You're right. There are some fans out there, and of course, some players who have never been through a lockout such as this. What consequences does a lockout carry? Are there any main ones that, like, what, how does this impact, I guess, you know, fans, mostly fans and players?
The way it impacts fans is my only consideration. I don't care how a lockout impacts ownership. I don't care how it impacts the commissioner himself. And frankly, based on how this has proceeded, his reputation, in my estimation, has been tarnished considerably. And his legacy will probably not be a shining one. You know, the players are all going to make their money eventually, at least the ones who deserve to make the big dollars, the big contracts. You know, just because you're in the major leagues for 5 or 6 years, it doesn't mean that you, you know, earned the right to have a retirement deal at some point. I know of many, many major league players who were able to grind through 3 or 4 or 5 years, and, you know, they made decent incomes, but they're not living in retirement in their early to mid 30s. So I'm not that concerned with how it impacts players or ownership. My concern is, what kind of stain will this leave on a fan base that seems to be exceedingly loyal? And anybody that is a fan of baseball understands that there is something about the game that draws you, whether they're arguing or not. There is something about the game that brings you back, regardless of the contractual agreement that they may or may not have, regardless also of whether or not the game is as entertaining as it once was. And that's in question these days. You know, because I grew up with a different looking Major League Baseball than the one I see today. That doesn't mean I enjoy today's game any less. It's just that I have to grow accustomed to the fact that starting pitchers rarely go 6 innings anymore. My great concern, frankly, is that they're moving quickly towards a time where the older generation of fan will slowly die out. And what are they doing to captivate that new generation, a generation that is completely distracted by other forms of entertainment right now? And that's my greatest concern. Where will baseball be in 20 or 30 years when, you know, the 10 and 11 and 12 and 13 year olds that you hope are watching or coming to the games now become wage earning adults? Are they still going to be there? And that's my greatest concern right now.
It's mind-blowing, it's frustrating, and I think we can all share in that frustration as fans. Over or under 100 games for this season for the Blue Jays?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
You mean how many will be played?
Yeah, do you think they'll play
over 100 games? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
As I said to Joe Siddle this morning, I don't think they're stupid enough to let an entire season go. But they continue to prove me wrong. And I speak of both sides here. I mean, it's easy to feel for the players in this, but I have a hard time feeling for either side, frankly. I know that it's a difficult profession, certainly a tough one to master, certainly a very difficult one to be involved in on a day-to-day basis. And I know that from personal experience. People who are in professional baseball don't live the same kind of lives that other people do. Their dedication has to be relentless, and it's almost year round. I can't even begin to think of how many games they're going to play this year. And I just can't imagine that they would be that ignorant and that stupid to allow the generation of revenue to suddenly come to a grinding halt And the earning of paychecks on the player side to stop too, because let's not kid ourselves. You know, Max Scherzer might have more money than he'll ever know what to do with, and he might be sitting at the bargaining table. But you know, your average, relatively new player, like say Danny Jansen, still has a mortgage to pay and still has years to that he wants to accumulate in the major leagues. I mean, there is a huge majority of players who aren't making the multi-million dollar salaries who desperately need to get back on the field. So I hope they see through this malaise and find some common sense quickly.
But you bring up multi-million dollar contracts, so I want to touch upon one quickly with you. Kevin Gausman signing in Toronto this offseason before the, you know, pre-lockout, if you will. What are your thoughts on the signing of Gausman, and how does he compare to the Pants, Robbie Ray?
It's probably not fair to offer a comparison until he's pitched at least one season for this team, because, you know, as we now know, Robbie Ray had the year of his life at the most opportune time, won the Cy Young Award, and went out onto the free agent market and eventually cashed in with Seattle. The timeline on the Gausman signing and the Ray signing in Seattle, I found very interesting, only because it was very clear that a year ago, and maybe even as far back as 2 years ago, the Blue Jays were always in on Kevin Gausman. There was an attraction there. There was definitely a desire to, at some point, put him in a Blue Jays uniform. And I sometimes sense that perhaps the indecision, if they even made any kind of a formal offer to Ray, caused them to react as quickly as possible and maybe even up the offer to Gausman to ensure that spot in the rotation was covered. Now, they didn't replace Robbie Ray with a Cy Young Award winner, but they certainly replaced him with, certainly based on last year, one of the best pitchers in the game. So I kind of look at it as a wash. You know, it's funny, the excitement generated by his signing and Berríos's extension was wonderful. But if you really think about it, nothing in that rotation has really changed, because you maintain Berríos, you lose Ray, you replace him with Gausman. You're still exactly where you were a year ago, only now you have Alek Manoah with, what, 4.5 months of major league time under his belt. So he's more acclimatized. You've got a year of progress from some of the younger pitchers who you're hoping will make some kind of a stance in 2022, whether that's Nate Pearson in the bullpen or as a starting pitcher, or perhaps even a hybrid, maybe a little mix of the two. We'll find out. But I love where they're sitting. I think they're in a good place. I have no doubt that whenever opening day begins, that the opening day lineup isn't set yet, because there are still some things that need to be done. You've got to figure out a way of replacing a pretty good second baseman. From a production standpoint, third base has not been productive the last, essentially ever since Josh Donaldson left.
Yeah.
So that's a concern. I still say they're a playoff caliber team without those positions filled. And if you know, those positions are ultimately manned by people like Santiago Espinal and Kevin Biggio, I still believe this is a playoff caliber team, but I can only imagine how much better they would be if, you know, Chris Bryant is playing third base, or Jose Ramirez, or Matt Chapman, perhaps, or you've gone and upgraded at second base and shifted somebody over to third, whatever it might be. I still think the infield has to be addressed, but either way, still makes for a very good ball club, even as they sit now.
Freddie Freeman, Jose Ramirez, or Chris Bryant? Which one are you wanting to put on that Blue Jays uniform?
I'd rather have Nolan Arenado, to be honest. And listen, here's one thing I know for sure about the Blue Jays, is that you can speculate all you want about who's going to end up in that uniform, but they have proven to me and to their fan base that they work secretively in acquiring players, and they surprise you every time they do. Because I distinctly recall nobody, and I mean nobody, saw Josh Donaldson for Brett Laurie plus two prospects coming. Nobody. When that deal was announced, it was a jaw dropper. I recall the reaction to David Price's acquisition from Detroit being just as jaw dropping. And even more so, the acquisition of Troy Tulowitzki. This is a club. And listen, you know how much they value their prospects. Did anybody see Austin Martin and Simeon Woods-Richardson being moved in the same deal for a really good all-star caliber starting pitcher? No. I don't remember anybody saying, well, this is what the Jays should do, and they went out and did it. So we can speculate about Ramirez and Freeman and Chris Bryant all we want, but the truth is, whatever they do, I think it's going to cause people to go, that's an interesting move. Didn't see that coming.
Moving in silence. They're very good at that, which is why we haven't really heard much of potential names or, you know, rumblings. You talked about him just before this, and I'll finish, you know, we'll wrap up with talking about him. What can we expect this season then from Kevin Biggio? We know he struggled. For me, he struggled last season, wasn't his best year. He wasn't awful. You know, he didn't have a miserable year by any stretch, but there was definitely, I don't know if he was dealing with like a prolonged injury all year that just never got talked about, or it was just all in his head. But what can we expect from Kevin this season?
He's a difficult one to forecast. You know, it's pretty easy to plug in what you think, say, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to accomplish if he stays healthy. And anytime anybody asks me about projections, I make sure I mention that, hey, as long as they're playing between 155 and 160 games, because if they don't, everything changes. There are some wonderful attributes to Kevin Biggio. One of those attributes, I think, actually may in some way hurt his overall value as a player, because he's not locked in positionally in one place. And he has always bought into the notion that my value as a player is the fact that I'm multi-positional, and he can play right field, he can play second base, he can play third base. Heck, if you threw on some catcher's gear, given where his father ended up starting his career, he could probably call signals behind home plate too. But, you know, his value to the club is that they can put him almost anywhere. And maybe that value is less than it should be based on the fact that he has yet to show that he's excelled at any of those positions. But he's also a reasonably young major league ball player. Let's not forget the year, and I don't remember exactly what the year was, that he was the player of the year in the Midwest League for New Hampshire. He was teammates with Bichette and Guerrero Jr., and yet he was, they're for the most part, their top performer for the Fisher Cats. The plate discipline is undeniable, but and it's wonderful that he's a left-handed bat, because the Blue Jays are just so right-handed heavy. He's just difficult to forecast. And I don't think, and this is pretty well stating the obvious, that Biggio doesn't have the same trajectory as Vladdy and Bo. And nobody's denying that. Nobody suggested that Kevin Biggio was ever going to become a 10-time All-Star. Whereas you could see that transpiring for either one of the other two kids. So I don't know what his value is, really. It's hard to project it. And it all depends on how they line up this year, right? If he's playing every day and he's playing primarily one position or switching back and forth regardless, then at least he'll get an opportunity to try and prove that he's a bona fide regular in the big leagues, but you know, he also could be moved. I mean, there is value in being multi-positional, and that value may show itself in a trade at some point if they decide that they need to upgrade at some of the positions he already plays. And that's highly possible. So he's not untouchable. I don't know how many guys on that roster are untouchable, but he's not untouchable. So we'll see where he goes. He's a tough one to project, no question.
Really, it's all just speculation at this point, but we're all hoping for the best. Is there anything that you wanted to add before we wrap up today?
Nothing at all. Let's just hope that two sides come to their senses as soon as possible.
Love it. Well, Jamie, I really appreciate the time that you've given me today, and I will be sure to send you an email with the final product once it's all come together.
Okay, Andrew, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, for those of you who have stuck it out, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Untapped North, featuring Sportsnet's Jamie Campbell. I hope everybody has a great rest of their weekend. Once again, I want to thank Jamie Campbell. Until next time. Peace.
Bye, have a great time.